How important was the issue of abortion to the recent election? Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is a returning guest, Eric Scheidler, who's the executive director of the Pro-Life Action League, and he is an active pro-lifer in the Chicago area. Eric, welcome back to the program.
I'm so glad to be with you today.
So tell me, how important was abortion in the election?
I think abortion was really critical in this election. You know, pro-life voters have waited for many years to see some of our chief goals achieved, particularly when it comes to the Supreme Court and when it comes to measures like defunding Planned Parenthood. And to hear these issues brought up, to hear them echoed again and again throughout the campaign, even if sometimes, you know, the position of the pro-life movement was not perfectly articulated along the way, particularly by President-elect Trump, it was certainly an encouraging thing to see along the days of the campaign, and I think played a decisive role. I saw this within the pro-life movement, the sort of massive effort on the part of pro-life people to educate their friends and neighbors and fellow churchgoers and coworkers and family on the importance of casting a pro-life vote and really putting the fate of unborn children, whose abortion at the rate of over 3,000 a day is the greatest injustice of our time, at the forefront of their electoral concerns.
The other side certainly put a lot of stock in it.
That's right, and I think that was a big mistake for them. I think Hillary Clinton and her very close friend, Cecile Richards, the CEO of Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion chain, really misread where the American people are coming on this and how important their view of a radical taxpayer-funded abortion throughout all 9 months of pregnancy is how people react to that, because I think in fact people are kind of horrified by that position. This is not something that women want. This is not something that Christians want, and evangelicals especially were a very significant voting bloc, voting in record numbers
yes.
this time around. And I think it really came back to hurt them. They thought they could bank on advocating this radical pro-abortion platform, and it didn't work for them.
This was the first national election since David DeLeiden's whole series of videos exposing Planned Parenthood. Could that have had any impact at all in this election, in light of what you're saying about how important abortion was?
I absolutely think so, because of a couple things. I mean, one, the public consciousness of abortion as an issue, as an injustice, as something that people are uncomfortable with, was really heightened by those videos. They had a really decisive role to play broadly in the culture on abortion and also on Planned Parenthood, and starting to break down the positive public image that Planned Parenthood has enjoyed for so many years. At the same time, those videos also mobilized pro-lifers in a new way. It breathed a kind of new life into the movement as people got fired up about what they were seeing. Many people who have been pro-life their whole lives saw those videos, saw the way that those Planned Parenthood officials were talking about carving up these children's bodies so grotesquely. And this inspired them to get active and inspired those who were already active to go deeper. And this created a groundswell of activity, including door-to-door lobbying that was going on all around the country in swing states where people were mobilized to take part in this election in a special way. So I think David DeLeiden and his videos from the Center for Medical Progress deserve some of the credit for the pro-life electoral victories that we saw yesterday.
And this is being pre-recorded, but it will air on Thursday. But in the meantime, as far as you said a moment ago, all 9 months of the pregnancy, all 9 months, is that the new position on abortion? Because I thought, for example, I took the time years ago to read Roe versus Wade, and it spends all this time making a big deal about, we're only talking about the first trimester. That's all we're talking about. We're talking about the first 3 months. Of course, they had a companion decision that very same day, not just Roe v. Wade, but Doe v. Bolton, which essentially allowed exceptions to those other, to the first trimester. So for all practical purposes, abortion on demand was given by those two cases. But comment about this all 9 months. I mean, isn't abortion illegal in some places when you get beyond the first trimester, or enlighten us?
Well, abortion is restricted in some states around the country once you enter the second trimester. of pregnancy, and then on into the third. It's restricted. It's not completely outlawed. We know that abortions are still taking place in some circumstances all over the country, very late into pregnancy. But in fact, in some states, like Maryland is an example, New Mexico is another, there are no such restrictions at all. And in fact, late-term abortionists have set up practices in those states where they are aborting children very late into pregnancy, on past the 30th week. During one of the debates, this issue came up, and Donald Trump talked about and even described what a late-term abortion is like. And all kinds of liberal pundits, including an abortionist, took to the blogs and the Twitter feeds the next day to denounce him and saying this just doesn't happen. But that's, in fact, false, as pro-life activists were able to point out, illustrating the locations around the country where you can go and get an abortion for any reason, if you've got the cash, deep into pregnancy, where you're talking about a fully formed child who simply is putting on weight before their birthday. So, even though those abortions are rare, when you've got a million abortions a year, rare is still a huge number of children. We're talking over 10,000 late-term abortions that are taking place in the United States every single year.
Yeah.
So that's the reality.
Yeah. And comment about the funding of abortion, because you said the American people don't want that. The Hyde Amendment, which has been in effect, I believe, since 1976, saying no federal funding of abortions, that's something the liberals wanted to definitely undo. And was that an issue, in your opinion, on Tuesday's election?
I think that Hillary Clinton's embrace of overturning the Hyde Amendment and forcing taxpayers to pay for abortion was a really key part of why so many voters were willing to do whatever it took to defeat her on Election Day. This is a position that is far out of keeping with what most Americans want. Even people who support the legal right to abortion do not believe it's right to force taxpayers to pay for those abortions. And the Hyde Amendment has been renewed year after year after year with bipartisan support.
Bipartisan.
Even Hillary Clinton's running mate has supported the Hyde Amendment, which has saved at least 2 million children from abortion. The Hyde Amendment doesn't just stop us from having to pay for abortions. Because of that lack of funding, children's lives are actually being saved because the money's not there for those abortions, and those mothers choose life instead. So this is a life-saving measure. It also keeps taxpayers from being involved in abortion. And Hillary Clinton really went out on a limb to support Planned Parenthood in their effort to have Hyde overturned, and I think that was another important factor in her losing so decisively.
Abortion in America, of course, is a problem that the Supreme Court ultimately is responsible for. Eventually the politicians do what they think the American people want to, but this was something, brought on the American experience by judicial fiat in Roe v. Wade, 7-2, 1973, and so forth. Comment about how important Supreme Court justices will be for the Trump administration.
Many people have forgotten that before Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton were handed down on January 22, 1973, the American people were actually decisively pushing back against the tide of legal abortion. There were measures all over the country to push back at the growing number of liberalized abortion laws that had been passed in the late 60s and early 70s. So, in fact, history was moving in another direction when the Supreme Court handed down those rulings and put a stop to that effort. With pro-life justices appointed to the court, starting with a pro-life replacement for Justice Antonin Scalia, who was such a strong advocate for the pro-life position on the court, and then perhaps replacing the likes of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who interestingly actually opposed the legal reasoning of Roe versus Wade, even though she supports abortion most adamantly. With those replacements, we could see a new Supreme Court that would finally allow Roe versus Wade to be tossed in the dustbin of history, along with Doe v. Bolton, and a new legislative vista would open up for us to be able to restrict late-term abortion, restrict funding of abortion, require parental involvement, and all these other measures that have been so effective around the country, including the kinds of medical standards and practices that Texas tried to impose on the abortion industry and the Supreme Court recently overturned. So we could see a massive, not only wave of pro-life legislation, but saving of unborn lives through a change in the Supreme Court. So this is an extremely significant event for the future of the pro-life movement, and more importantly, for the future of unborn children who would be facing abortion.
Some of the battles that we've seen over Supreme Court justices, probably the worst one I've ever seen, you know, was, Robert Bork, I guess, would be the very single worst one. The second worst one would be Clarence Thomas. And in some ways, the 800-pound elephant in the room, or whatever the cliche is abortion. I mean, abortion is such a critical issue. So these people got up and lied about Clarence Thomas, mainly because they didn't like him being pro-life and then him sitting on the Supreme Court.
That's right, and I hope that with one party also in control of the Senate, which has to confirm these appointments, I think we're going to see less of that rancor out there. I'm sure that the Democrats, the pro-aborts, the liberals will all join forces to try to do everything they can to stop that from happening. But one of the interesting features of this election is that Donald Trump actually went farther than any other presidential candidate has
Yes.
in saying that he would appoint pro-life justices.
He was a fighter.
In the past, it was a little more kind of doublespeak. It was kind of a dog whistle about the kinds of justices that they would appoint. He flat out said pro-life justices, and that kind of honesty is refreshing, if nothing else. Now, of course, we have to hold him to it.
Yes.
And put pressure on the Senate to hold him to it. But I feel very optimistic that we're going to see a great replacement for Justice Scalia, and then a transformation in the court, especially over the first several years of this new administration.
There will be a lot of conflict, and the liberal media will pull out all the stops, and so will some of the liberal politicians or whatever to essentially try and bork any truly pro-life nominee to the Supreme Court that Donald Trump would bring up. The good thing about Trump, this is interesting for me to say this, but anyway, the good thing is that he's kind of a fighter. So, I could picture him fighting back. Sometimes our side doesn't always do that.
That's right. You know, he really injects a sort of fighting spirit into things and isn't there to play the political game. Isn't there to set himself up for some kind of consulting job or some professorship in the future. He's got a different agenda, and that's going to play into the politics of abortion and especially Supreme Court appointments. He has no incentive to do other than to fulfill his promises there. And, of course, the Senate, each of those senators knows there are pro-lifers ready to support them or not in any upcoming election. So we're going to be watching what they do, and we're going to be putting significant pressure on them to do everything they can to support good pro-life appointees, not just to the Supreme Court, but to the entire federal judiciary. Where do Supreme Court justices come from? They come from the lower federal courts. So every district court judge, every appellate court judge, these are all going to be important appointments.
Wow. This is a new day, potentially. As far as Planned Parenthood, one of their main comments is that they don't do just abortions. And so, therefore, any federal funding that they get, supposedly, none of it goes to abortions. That's obviously a farce. But a comment about a Trump administration and defunding or even partially defunding Planned Parenthood.
Well, Trump said very clearly that Planned Parenthood as an abortion provider should not be receiving federal funds. This is a key priority for the pro-life movement. Planned Parenthood gets about $500 million every year from federal and state governments. It's about half of their budget, and they do about one-third of the abortions in this country. If Planned Parenthood is deprived of that massive government subsidy that allows them to keep the lights on and staff their call centers and make those appointments for abortions and everything, even if those dollars don't directly support abortion, they keep Planned Parenthood afloat. They lose that money, and they're going to have a hard time staying in business. If a third of the abortion market suddenly is not being served by Planned Parenthood, this could have massive ramifications on the actual availability of abortion around the country, which translates into the saving of millions of lives over the long term. Yeah. So defunding Planned Parenthood is a major, major priority. And exactly how we will craft the legislation that makes that possible, especially with the Supreme Court yet to be shaped by this new administration, those are important questions to ask, and we'll have to be very cunning in how we try to achieve that. But great strides were made in the final years of the Obama administration in proposing budgets, especially through the reconciliation process that did defund Planned Parenthood, though sadly those were vetoed. So I see a lot of hope that this other major priority of defunding Planned Parenthood can be achieved too, and quickly.
You say cunning, but why don't we just say wise?
Certainly.
Unless anybody take that out of context.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have to be careful. We have to be wise and clever.
Yes, and your website, sir?
ProLifeAction.org is the place to go for all of your pro-life activist needs. We're going to be launching a new site soon with all kinds of practical tools for getting involved with pro-life activism in your community, making a difference, not just politically, but culturally, and saving babies directly where they're being killed at the abortion clinics.
Eric Scheidler, thanks for being with us.
So glad to be with you today.
Okay, God bless. Bye-bye.